Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with a Chicken Whisperer radio show brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, November 18th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in today to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is Monday, but no fret. Before you know it, it'll be Friday, I guarantee it. All you have to do is tune into this show every day at noon, and, man, your day not only will go by faster, but your week will go by faster, and you're going to learn an awful lot about keeping backyard poultry and sustainable living. So we thank you so much for tuning in today, even though it is Monday. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We've got, being Monday, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Peter Brown's going to be joining us here shortly, and we've got a really great topic today that I'm sure that's going to interest a lot of people. Tis the season. People are starting to pick out their chicks and what breeds they want for next season. They're ordering their chicks. They're going to be hatching chicks out. It's really, really getting into gear for next season, which is going to be absolutely huge. And today's topic is chick quality and internal organ development as it relates to egg size and body size development. So, hey, where are you going to learn that anywhere else but here? Nowhere. So thank you very much for tuning in. All of our homeschoolers out there, this will be a great topic for you as well, as y'all get started with the incubation early next year. So thank you, homeschoolers, for tuning into the show. All the over-the-road truck drivers that tune in, killing a little bit of time while you're out there on the road. Hey, keep the rubber on the road. Get there safely. Get that freight delivered and get back home to your family nice and safe. We thank you for tuning in on our archive on iTunes. Thank you, over-the-road truck drivers. Everybody that listens live every single day, Monday through Thursday at noon, thank you so much. You're wonderful folks, and the thousands, literally thousands of you that listen to the archive on iTunes.com, podcast.com, Zoom.com, and, of course, blogtalkradio.com. Thank you very much. And last but not least, all the folks that stream this radio show live to their customers out there, the feed and seed stores, thank you very much for doing so. Hope business is booming as you get ready for this holiday season. And hopefully a lot of chicken toys and chicken things will be in stockings all over the country. So got to love it. We got a great week lined up for you, without a doubt. Let me look at the calendar here. Today, of course, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Tomorrow we're going to be talking all about, yep, you guessed it, essential oils, one of our most popular shows now, one of our most popular new shows, that is. We're going to be talking all about essential oils with Tracy at Purple Lotus Oils. That's going to be awesome tomorrow. And then Wednesday, yep, Garden-Wise, Living with Arlena, gardening year-round all across the country. That'll be this coming Wednesday. And then this Thursday, we've got poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D. So we've got a full week lined up for you. Lots of great shows this week. Hope you can tune in. Mark it on those Blackberries, on those iTunes, on those iPhones, your iPads, your computers, on that old Chicken Whisperer calendar you've got from Amazon hanging on the wall. Mark it. So today, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Tuesday, tomorrow, all about essential oils with Tracy and Purple Lotus Oils. Wednesday, Garden Wise Living. Thursday, poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D. Well, boy, let me tell you, I don't know where you're at, but I am sending out prayers and thoughts and good vibes and everything else to the folks that were affected by that massive, massive swath of storms yesterday that went all through Oklahoma and Texas, the Midwest, up through Illinois. I think Illinois maybe got the brunt of it. Last I saw, 63 tornadoes were reported. And I guess all the professionals will work it out based on what was tornado and what was straight line winds and all of that. But I don't guess it really matters if your barn's in rubbish. Several people lost their lives. So, again, our Chicken Whisperer prayers go out to everybody that was affected by the storms over the weekend. Not good, as you know, we have a lot of storms through Tornado Alley, and then Georgia is starting to be included in that. Our home state and where our homestead's at. You remember 2 years ago we got the storm shelter installed. That was actually on a television show. It was featured on that show, Shipping Wars. It's not doing us a lot of good because we've just been in so much on the road. Holy cow. Seems like since Lily was born 8 months ago, we've been on the road. So 13 days after she arrived, we hit the road and hadn't looked back, spreading the chicken love and seeing this great land, meeting great friends. But prayers go out to all the people that were affected by the storms. I did post yesterday a picture of some palm trees and a clear blue sky. It was absolutely gorgeous yesterday, 87 degrees, sunny. And it was wonderful. Today it looks like it's about the same. They're forecasting a little bit of rain down here in South Florida, but let me tell you, it is amazing right now. It's got to be 85 if it's 1 degree. And it was just wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. We are very, very blessed to wake up in this beautiful, beautiful area. And we'll probably be doing some events down here in South Florida as Chick Days gets a little closer. In fact, we may start doing an event here in the South Florida area before we head out towards the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We are going to Texas in 2014. We'll probably get up towards Kentucky, Ohio, St. Louis, and Michigan in 2014. We may do some things in Arkansas in 2014, and maybe, just maybe, up towards the Northeast and towards New Hampshire and up that way. We'll see how far out that way we get. Spreading the chicken love is what we're all about, and bringing the experts on and just learning all about this great hobby that we all love, homesteading and backyard poultry. And today is no exception with Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Let me get back over here to the switchboard here. I got a little bit of glare from the sun. I'm sitting outside on the picnic table under the RV awning. Welcome, Christmas Chick. So glad you could make it. Bard Rock, Bard Rock's wife. Gotta love it. Thank you for tuning in. We've got Ann in the chat room as well. It's going to be a fun, fun show and a very educational show. And I don't think it's going to be hours and hours and hours long, but we may wrap up around 1 or 1:15. So we've got a great show as it approaches 12:12. Maybe, and let's see, we got some more people calling in, but it's not Peter as we wait for Peter to call in. If you're just tuning in for the last maybe 10 days, we did have a show last week, of course, but the event up in Nashville went wonderful. We had a big book signing up there, completely sold out of books that I had brought for the book signing, and we had a great three-hour workshop. The two-hour workshop ended up turning into a three-hour workshop, and great information for everybody that attended, and all that was videotaped. It'll be made into snippets and recorded and put on the Tractor Supply website, so we're definitely looking forward to that coming on their website, but we're also definitely looking at touring the country here come Chick Days, come late February in the South. And then really once March 1st gets here, that last week of February rolls around, really everywhere across the country that Tractor Supply has stores, 1,200-plus stores, I think, now, all over the country. And it'll be good to get back to Dallas. We were in Dallas in 2010 and had a great time, met a lot of great folks there. East Dallas Dave was one of them, longtime listener. He hasn't joined us recently. As you know, he had a tragic loss in his family. His son died unexpectedly at 21, 22 years old, and so he's just dealing with that right now, but he will be joining us again soon. He'll be joining us back. Always good to hear. Also, we have a lot of live listeners that can't access the chat room anymore. I know that your workplace caught on to you, and they eliminated that, so no worries. Hey, my first article is out. If you subscribe to Acreage Life Magazine, it's a good one. I've been asked many times over the years, more times than I can probably count on one, maybe even two hands. I've been asked to write a monthly magazine article, and I've always declined. But when they asked me Acreage Life, I guess they asked the right way, or I was very impressed with both their print edition and their online electronic edition of their magazine. I liked what they were all about, and we saw eye to eye on a lot of things. So I said, what the heck, might as well. So in fact, I've got to get working here. I've got in 2 days, I've already started it, but in 2 days I have my deadline for the January issue, which is going to be talking about lighting the coop, adding light in the coop to continue the laying through the winter. So I've got a lot of information to put down for that. But it is limited. I think I've got 750 words maybe to deal with. I know I had about 1,000 in my December article, which was keeping your flock comfortable in the winter, don't kill them with kindness, not using heat in the coops, not using heat lamps, things like that. And I'm glad they have editors because they edited it down to about 600 or 700 words off of my 1,000 words, I guess. So. But I think the information still stayed, for the most part, the same. So you can, it's a free online subscription. I know I posted it on my Facebook page. If you're not a fan on Facebook, join us, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer, and you just go to that page, scroll down a little bit, and you'll see where you can get a free, it's the same thing as getting it delivered to your mailbox, just online, and it is free for you. and you can click on that link and sign up their free electronic issue. But we'll be giving away plenty of yearly subscriptions. It comes out every single month, Acreage Life magazine. And so we'll be giving away some free subscriptions to that magazine as the days go on. And you'll be able to read my column in that every single month. Hopefully it'll be of interest to you. Also, some chickens and news related more close to home. Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, and myself, I called her one day and I said, you know, we really need to work on something to get to these coop tours. You've heard me talk about it, about these very popular chicken coop tours. I've been to many that are popping up all across the country, and the premise is good. It's a good idea. I think their goals are good, spreading the chicken love. That's what it's all about. But instead of spreading the chicken love, which they do grandly, they may also be spreading some disease. And so we just want to make sure that we get the right information into the hands of the folks that are running, not only running the chicken coop tours, but also participating in the chicken coop tours, because, you know, I've seen it where you just walk right into the person's backyard, right into the run, right into the coop, walking around, stepping in all that chicken poo, and then getting on their bicycle and tootling a quarter mile down the road, getting off their bicycle, going to the next coop, and walking in their run, walking in their coop, leaving the poo behind. Pardon me, had a little sneeze there. Sneaked up on me, attack sneeze. And depositing some poo from the previous coop, and then so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. And so not really a great example of using and just good biosecurity with your flock, that is for sure. So she emailed me this week, and she says she's got something going, kind of an outline that we'll be adding to, and we hope to have that done before the end of the year. So as spring arrives and more people start having their chicken coop tours, a lot in the spring, a lot in the fall, we can get this information to them, and then they can do with it what they wish, but we would hope that they would utilize it to benefit the health of their flocks. You can spread the word about backyard chicken cooping. You can have a great turnout. You can have a great tour without people walking through your run, walking through your coop, and having that chance of spreading the infectious poultry diseases from backyard flock to backyard flock to backyard flock to backyard flock. So we're going to be working on that, trying to get that publication done and out to all the coop tours. I think that would be a very important asset for them. And some will abide by it, I'm sure, and some will not. They'll think, oh, this will never happen. We don't have to worry about this. This is silly. We won't be. People are welcome in my coop all they want. And as this happens more and more, is it just going to be a matter of time? Maybe. Will it ever happen? I don't know. Where maybe two or three flocks on the tour come down with a dreaded disease and they lose their flock to this disease that was spread from coop to coop to coop to coop to coop on the coop tour, because biosecurity practices were not used. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what she has down on paper. I look forward to adding to that with the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and hopefully getting this done and published for next year. So we're definitely looking forward to that. But hey, glad you're tuning in. We got Ask the Chicken Doctor today, Peter Brown, and we do have a great topic for everybody today. If you're just tuning in, our topic today is going to be chick quality and internal organ development as it relates to egg size and body size development. And what we're going to do, since I don't see where the Chicken Doctor's called in yet, I'm going to save you a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and go to our commercial break, and when we come back, we'll welcome him on, and then Peter can go straight through, commercial free, with his topic today. So he hasn't called in yet. Maybe he'll call in during the commercial break, and we'll go ahead and get this out of the way. So when he does come on, we will not have to bother him or break into his information whatsoever. He'll just be able to give us the information that we want to hear. So we'll be back right after this short break with some educational information from Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFRadio.com. That's GQFRadio.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We appreciate you tuning in on this Monday episode of Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. And it looks like I've got about 23 past the hour, and there he is, right here, just in time, right after commercial break. We've got Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. He's going to be joining us, and he's going to be talking all about, you guessed it, getting started with those baby chicks and internal organ development. So let's, why don't we go ahead and give him a big Chicken Whisperer welcome. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Andy, how's it going?
It's going good. It's going good. Sweeter than snuff and half as dusty and finer than frog hair, split four ways, they say here in the South. So gotta love it. Let me get over here to where I need to be to get the show rolling. But yeah, today's topic, when I saw it last night, very interesting, chick quality and an internal organ development as it relates to egg size and body size development, and people are starting to, they'll be starting to order in their eggs, getting their eggs, collecting the eggs, putting the incubator, and see all that development with the candler and things like that, and what's good, what's not good, what should we pick out, what items we should look for. So I'm sure everybody's got their Chicken Whisperer spiral notebooks out, ready to take some notes based on your experience and knowledge.
Yeah, it's a combination of things, and we're not going to go super duper deep into it because it can, get pretty technical. But we'll keep it on the lighter side and go over some things that are important. This kind of plays into the different shows that we've already done in relation to the gut health and so on. So I just wanted to, you know, continue to emphasize the importance of the gut health, but not only that part of it. You certainly have to have a good quality egg to start out with. So, you know, some of the things that people need to do, in my opinion, and I base this largely on what I see from phone calls, Facebook questions, and so on. A lot of the chicks that I see people talking about are what I would consider not the greatest quality. And there is a huge difference between being able to hatch chickens and be able to hatch good quality chickens that are going to be bright and alert and healthy and vibrant and continue to grow and have the least amount of problems during their juvenile growth cycle, which makes them better adults.
Right.
As they, you know, just like any other animals, they get behind in their health and growth structure and their stature in their younger days, in their growing days, then in their older days, they just never seem to catch up. They don't have the same viability. They're always sick or they've always got some sort of abnormality and so on. So that's what prompted me to do this little thing today. May not be the longest show we've ever done, but then again, it may drag on. Who knows? But starting basically with the breeder flock, I want to remind people that, you know, your chicks are only going to be as good as those breeders that you have. And by that, I don't necessarily mean the breed, but I mean how well you take care of them, how well they're fed, how disease-free they are, how well you've controlled coccidiosis, worms, and all of these other things. And I would suggest that a regular supplementation of a breeder's diet with other items. You can use any good vitamin electrolyte package, probiotics for sure. Very excited about the oil of oregano that we've been using lately. It's just been coming back with tremendous results for the people that have used it. Keeping these breeders in top physical and intestinal health will go a long way to producing good, solid, quality chicks. You know, we often hear people talk about, you know, they bought in some eggs that were shipped in and they put them in the incubator and, you know, two of them hatched. My guess is, and I don't have access to all the information, I don't see everything, but just my general knowledge of these things over the years as far as the eggs are concerned, the better the quality of the egg. And that doesn't just necessarily mean the shell. I mean, there are a number of parameters to follow and look at as far as the quality of the egg is concerned, but the more viscous, loose, watery the egg white is in that egg, the greater the chance that it won't hatch after being shipped and handled and banged around and what have you in a post office shipping container. So it would behoove you to do everything you could quality-wise, good quality food, good clean water, supplementation of the breeding flock. One of the other things that I like that for supplementation for a breeding flock, it's is the sea kelp. A good sea kelp fed free choice to the birds will go a long way in helping them over the long haul, you know, achieve the goals that you want to do, and that is, you know, good quality eggs, good quality chicks coming out of those eggs. So it's the age of the breeders as well. The older the birds are that you're maintaining as your breeding stock, the more you might want to do some sort of supplementation to them. You know, we've got a number of things we've recommended here on the show before because we know they work. You could look at the A-Lite amino acid, the VitaPro B, the probiotic that we have available. Those kinds of things will enhance the intestinal tract, which will make the birds produce, in the long run, better eggs, healthier chicks when they end up hatching out. The intestinal stability of the birds, whether they be day old or whether they be adults, is critically important. The more opportunities you have for breakdowns in the intestinal tract, then the greater the opportunity for problems that end up being in the egg. And I don't mean necessarily things that transfer to the egg, but deficiencies in the egg. Those do transfer from the breeders. If they're deficient in vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin B, there's going to be problems. And so to try to ward off those problems, I would suggest, especially in your older breeding stock, I would supplement them every day for 10 to 14 days maximum. And then every other day or so after that during the breeding cycle, we all know, and we've discussed on the show here many, many times about, you know, the monumental task that it is for a bird to produce an egg every day, the mobilization of more than half of the calcium in her body just to put down an eggshell every day. And if that becomes deficient in the diet, guess what? She's going to take it out of her body, and she'll keep doing that until her body makes her stop laying eggs because she doesn't have the equipment, the necessary means to continue to lay eggs. That's one of the big problems we see with birds that have gone out of egg production. Too many treats, all kinds of things we've seen on the show here. I can't remember what it was, a good year or so ago. Somebody couldn't understand why they weren't getting any eggs out of the birds feeding cracked corn. You know, it's kind of like expecting a child to grow by feeding them, plain ordinary white bread every day and small glass of water. It's not going to be very beneficial. Same thing with birds. So you get out of it what you put into it. If you don't take care of your breeding stock, you're going to have a number of anomalies come up in the chicks. Technically, anybody can hatch them. If you can control the temperature and the humidity in your oven, you can hatch chickens. The question then would be, what kind of quality would we be getting out of there? How would they fare out once they were put into a brooder and started to work out and start to grow on their own? So, again, that's part of the reason that we were wanting to talk about this today, because I feel a lot of these questions, and maybe just putting it out here on the show again will, you know, remind folks of some of the things that that are necessary here to get good quality chicks, because that's where it all starts if you want good quality birds in the end. So when we look at intestinal health, we start looking at chicks are cute when they're born. We are under the impression, for the most part, that everything's complete and it's just a matter now of everything getting bigger and so on inside the bird, as far as the heart and the spleen, the liver and the intestines and so on and so forth, and getting that growth that you're looking for. The bird, when they're born, their gut is basically sterile. And it is their environment where they pick up. And this pretty much goes for humans as well. The environment will populate the intestine with whatever bacteria, whether it be good, whether it be bad, that is available in their environment. The intestine itself will take about another 2 weeks after the bird hatches in order to mature to the point where it is really populated with bacteria and functioning properly. So it would behoove you to take care of that intestine and make sure that as this bird starts along and starts to grow and so on, that it will achieve the optimal growth and size that you're looking for in the offspring from the breeding stock. So one begets the other. Poor quality care and or poor quality eggs coming from the breeders will certainly give you poor quality chicks and then poor quality adults. And then you'll always be playing catch up and always trying to fix something. So this would be kind of like getting some maintenance done on your car. Same thing. If you wait till it breaks, that's one thing. Usually costs a lot more. But if you get some regular maintenance done, at the end of the day, it can cost a lot less. So you want to make sure that the intestine is populated properly. I like the for starting chicks off, I think it's a great thing to start them off on a we call it Chick Saver here. the grow gel product, it's all the same. It all comes from the same company. And those things are great to start them off with and are relatively inexpensive. Contain all the amino acids, vitamins, minerals, electrolytes. And the other thing is that it's not a dry feed, and it's because it's wet, and so they get some moisture at the same time. And then obviously
we've even talked about when people order, if they're not going to hatch out, they're going to order chicks from a hatchery. A lot of hatcheries will have that as an option. You pay a little bit more for it. They'll add that into the shipping box, especially if there's going to be any time. But if there's going to be any type of heat in the summertime, if you're getting these things shipped in the back of the truck, sitting on the back dock of the USPS, but really any time of the year. But it's something that you've talked about on the show, I've talked about on the show before, that if you're going to order chicks and that hatchery offers that option to add some of this into their shipping box for $2, it would be well worth that $2 to have that done.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we also talked about, one of the big factors that is out there as far as chick quality is concerned is the chicks dehydrating, or practically starving to death from the standpoint of, we think of that 72-hour window of opportunity for shipping birds, but that opportunity starts as soon as that chick is out of that shell. Actually, it starts a little bit before that. Yolk is retained in the body prior to hatch, so by the time the chick gets out, that clock's already running. And the longer the delays, chick hatched in the middle of the night and not shipped till sometime the next day, has all of that time running off the clock. So if it's delayed anywhere, the birds, generally, start to, run down in quality and dehydrating and so on and so forth just from the shipping. So it's extremely important to make sure that you do everything you can to get the birds off to a real good start. You want good uniform chicks. And, hatching birds from real young breeding stock because you're anxious and everything else, you might be smart to wait a little bit because, smaller chicks, as a general rule, do not do as well as their larger counterparts. I'll go over some information here in a little bit, and we'll talk about that and what it means at the end of the day. And the rhyme and the reason why those chicks might be a little bit better. So you might be a little bit smarter, even though we're anxious many times to, get our breeders and collect their first eggs and get them in the incubator and everything else. You might be smarter to just let that bunch go. I know when I was working in a commercial sector, we used to do that. The first bunch of eggs we would get from a young breeder flock, we would just send them out the door as breakers and not even bother with them because the quality of the chicks, as a general rule, even though they're small, they just never seem to achieve the optimal performance that you're looking for at the end of the day. Performance comes in many different facets here. You can be looking for egg production, you can be looking for meat production, you can be looking for overall showbird quality, which is a different ball game altogether. You're looking for different attributes. You're looking for length of back, the stature of the head, and the set of the wings, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot more there. But you still want them to be viable. You still don't want to have to be running around like a nut trying to keep them alive every 5 seconds. And a lot of folks seem to have that problem. So, one of the ways to do that is to get them off to a good start. looking at probiotics, this is a field that is changing almost daily. The recognition of the fact that this is a methodology for using less antibiotics, getting healthier chicks and or birds, and it's a game changer at the end of the day. Highly recommended by myself and other people who have studied it over the years, and it's just a tremendous opportunity to get the gut flora set correctly. And by doing this, you change the pH of the gut in such a fashion that it makes it difficult, not impossible at the moment, but very difficult, for the bad pathogens, the E. coli, Staphylococcus, and so on, to live in the intestine. Makes it tougher for them. The lactobacillus, basically what is in most probiotics these days, attaches to the gut wall, makes it tougher for these guys to attach, because most of these have to attach to the gut wall and then produce their toxins and what have you from there. So if there's no place for them to attach themselves, and the environment is not necessarily conducive for them to carry on and live and reproduce themselves, then they're usually defecated out. In an overwhelming situation, a group of birds would have a problem with being overwhelmed by the offending bacteria or whatever it is, and maybe still colonize the intestine, but maybe not to the same degree it would if there was nothing there to protect it whatsoever. Now, bear in mind that in all of this, and I know it's a little bit convoluted, but at the same time, a good, healthy intestine, one that is properly colonized with good bacteria and a minimal amount of bad bacteria, has a protective coating of mucus that's produced by the cells of the intestinal wall. And what the probiotics allow the intestinal wall to do then, especially at this early stage, is to do a few things. It allows the intestinal wall to mature. It allows the gut wall to become thicker. And it allows the intestine to grow and become longer in length. And one of the other things that's important to think about is that the intestine of the bird is a lot more complicated than one might think. And we've gone over some of this before, but the cecal tonsil itself is a very small organ, but by the same token, somewhat complex. Different things go on there than go on in the regular parts of the intestine. And it can take as many as 6 weeks for the cecal tonsils to mature after a bird is born. So, again, going back and looking at it, you want to stabilize the bird's gut. You want to, in my opinion, start them off on a good, healthy diet with a good, healthy probiotic. I would certainly look at the Chick Saver. I would look at the Grow Gel. They're one and the same. They all come from the same manufacturer. We just package our own. And I would look at those as giving those things to the birds, right off the bat. That would be their first meal along with water, and then right after they've had an opportunity to consume that, then I'd put out their regular dry food and make sure that they are, eating and drinking, and certainly drinking. And in their water you can put the I like the Vitapro B because it's heavily fortified with a probiotic, so you can start them off right there. You can sprinkle some probiotic on top of their food. You really would do yourself a lot of good as far as that's concerned.
Freddie, for this one, about that 72-hour period, I want to throw this out there, because if one person thought this, then there may be others that think it as well. I was contacted by a gentleman, private message on Facebook, and we were talking. And he said something that kind of raised my eyebrow. He said, after the 72-hour withdrawal period, after they hatch, what should I start feeding them? And initially I thought that, he was reading information out there regarding the chicks can survive off the absorption of the yolk for 72 hours. That allows them to be shipped all over the country. You've talked about that. They ship early in the evening versus the next morning, and that's when the clock starts. But he had read, and I had talked to Bridget about this a little bit. I said, really, what's up with this? And he clarified and said, no, he read it in a very old book from maybe turn of the century. And she was saying, yes, back in the day. So we're all quick to say, I am guilty of this as well. Well, the old-timers did it this way, so I'm and it worked for them, but again, you look at an old poultry book, and apparently they withheld food and water for 72 hours before they started giving it to them after they actually hatched out. That was either in poultry books or instructional books. So for us to say, oh, the old-timers did it right, I guess maybe not all the time. We know things better now. We have better research now, things. And I'm guilty of that as too, saying, well, it's good for Grandpa, it's good for me, regardless of what the new studies show. But back in the day, apparently there was, it was being taught that once they hatch out of the incubator, wait 72 hours before you start. Now we know as soon as possible, food and water when they hatch. So I just want to share that with other listeners who either misunderstood that, you know, when you see it out there, oh, they can survive 72 hours. That doesn't mean we withhold it if you're hatching out. And it definitely doesn't mean if you buy them to wait 72 hours when you get them. Just to clarify, because I have seen firsthand where people either misunderstood that or had bad information, so I wanted to share that with folks as well.
Yeah, and I could see somebody subscribing to that, you know, figuring if you just got them in, this morning, and, you know, you had some other chores to do, they could, you know, just sit in the boxes and wait until you had an opportunity to get them out. Probably a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the quicker you can get your hands on them, get them into a stable environment, and that kind of thing, the better off you're going to be. And, but all of these things go back to, you know, we want to go back and we want to look at the breeders because that's where it all comes from. Mistakes that are made with breeding stock will haunt you in your quality and your livability, your uniformity. When we talk about uniformity, we talk about birds relatively growing even. You know, I know that genetically some birds are going to grow a little faster than others. This is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about birds that are severely behind compared to a pen mate who is doing very, very well. There are things you can do, and some of those things we talk about, the vitamins, electrolytes, and the water with a probiotic, on top of the feed, feeding the grow gel or the chick saver prior to giving the dry food. All of those things, good quality drinking water, keeping the brooder comfortable. I don't know necessarily whether I throw a number out there as to what the temperature should be. If the comfort of the bird should tell you.
Right.
You know, and, you know, we have this thing that some things are set in stone, not necessarily. You know, I know myself, it's a funny thing. I can, as long as I have a light jacket on my upper body, I can wear shorts most of the winter. And, it doesn't bother me. But you let the top part get cold, and then I need to get something on.
Anybody that's ever had chicks in a brooder can definitely tell you firsthand, like you're explaining. You'll have some that will be under that heat source all day long, some that are in the back corner away from it, and that's when you look down. If you see that evenly spread, then you know, hey, you're doing the right thing. You got enough room for them to acclimate to where they want to be, what comfort level. You know, Jen, she's, it could be 98 and she's cold, it seems like sometimes. And then it's 72 and I'm burning up. So, you're exactly right. Anybody who's ever had those brooder chicks know that they're all a little bit different. And I'll add to that, too, that we're not talking about specifically brooding, that we've never ever had a thermometer in our brooder. If so, you want it down by the chicks, not just hanging on the edge of the wall up by you where it's easy to reach, because that's not telling you what the chicks are feeling. And you know, Peter, it's in like every book out there, the first week 95, the next week 90, the next week 85, and gradually reduce it down. But I'm like you. I think that, that goes back to my teaching in a completely different field. When I was a paramedic, we'd have so many paramedics in the back of the ambulance, look at that cardiac monitor, look at straight in diagnose the rhythm and say, I'm going to treat that with. And I had great instructors back in the day, and it's like, no, you're not treating that machine. You're treating your patient. So that is just a tool you're using. Don't treat the rhythm. Treat your patient with these drugs. And so now I carry that over to raising the baby chicks, is that, you know, watch the chicks. They will tell you so much. You know, if they're all huddled together under that heat lamp making tons of noise, they are cold. If they're all in the back corner away from it, kind of lethargic, their beaks hanging open, they're probably a little hot. So I'm a firm believer from that. Even crossing over from a different field, I can see how that makes a lot of sense. Treat your patient, not your monitor. Watch your chicks. They'll tell you so much when they're in, at that stage.
Yeah, and, you know, to me it's an important thing overlooked by a lot of people. Here's another thing that a lot of people might not realize. If you're keeping it too cold, okay, the chicks, believe it or not, are not going to get up and look for food and water. They're going to huddle. They're going to stay close to each other and that kind of thing. So if you let them get too cold, you're going to, you know, get away from that optimal growth that we're looking for, and then you're going to create a stress, and then you're going to allow the possibility of a pathogen that the birds may have come into contact with that's being held in check by the fact that they, up till that point, you know, they were in good health and the gut was in good shape, but now you're changing the game because they are very fragile at that age. Just because we can bounce them around on an airplane and ship them from Timbuktu to Yahooville really doesn't, tell the whole tale here. So it's a very important thing. And, as far as all of the other things are concerned, you want to look for, birds that are well hydrated, and it's a very important aspect of it. You can tell birds when you first get them in. You should be able to look at the feet and the legs, and you actually can look at them. Once you see it, you'll never forget it. But they actually look shriveled and a little bit paler color, which is not breed related. Okay, some breeds have a little bit different color legs than others, and off colors and so on. But you'll actually be able to see it, and birds that non-black type legs and shanks and stuff. Red hawks are an indication of it, an indication of the bird's hydration state. So you can tell. There are some things. There are some parameters you can look at. I would quickly look at birds that I was getting in and just see, what kind of condition they were in. As I put them out and put them under the brooder, whether it be from your own incubator or from somebody that shipped them to you from a hatchery. By and large, most hatcheries, to my knowledge, are going to try to do everything they can to get the birds out the door as quick as they can. They do understand the fact that every minute really counts, but sometimes things are done for convenience more so than the overall health of the bird, and that does happen, and I've seen it happen, and there are people that I've been in contact with who have been the victims of that kind of a thing, where birds were actually hatched out on a holiday and weren't shipped till the next day, so they've already got a 24-hour plus deficit on their 72 hours, so not to belabor the point too much, just that it's extremely important. So let's go back quickly to this gut health thing. The other beneficial factors that will come out of this gut health thing are really huge. Generally, you'll see birds with more robust, better livability. You'll also see, and this is something you can't see it, physically see it, but you generally will get a higher maternal antibody level. There is a relationship between good gut bacteria and the immune cells of the bird's intestinal tract. We talked about birds having about 70% of their immune cells lying within the intestinal tract. And so it would make good sense for you to keep that in good shape. And it will then play into their overall good health from top to bottom. So it just makes a lot of sense. You'll have more viable chicks. You'll have healthier ones. You'll spend less money trying to keep them healthy in the long run. And I know that there are folks out there that operate on a shoestring budget or whatever, and they may not look at it in the same light. But by the same token, I know for a fact, and this I don't have to go anywhere else but my brain to figure this part of it out, dead birds don't pay bills. They just don't. And you can have it whichever way you want it. I see it on Facebook all the time about people who got chicks from people and they're not happy with them. They're sick and they're this and they're that. And a lot of it goes back to the fact of not understanding this whole process of how to keep these birds healthy from day one, right out of the box. And but you know, again, how the eggs are handled, even by yourself. I've seen some recent things, you know, on Facebook. And even over the phone, you have to keep these eggs in good condition, and realize that they are constantly, whether you realize it or not, losing moisture. And the more moisture they lose, the longer they're sitting around, the longer, and this plays into it as well. The older, generally, the breeder, the poorer the eggshell. It's a natural progression. So, bearing all of that in mind, eggs that sit around and are just allowed to dehydrate usually end up having poor quality chicks at the other end. So, you know, they need to take that into consideration, sanitation, and so on and so forth. And the brooding part of it is a big deal. But it is a big deal. But going back and looking at the intestine, it is important. And I can't, you know, I know I'm belaboring the point a little bit, but you really got to drive it home sometimes in order for some folks to really get it and understand it. But there is this is a big deal, and becoming a bigger and bigger deal as research and time goes on. Think of it this way: there are, at this moment, at least, and there may be more discovered later on through different techniques that are being developed, but there are about 600 different species of bacteria in a chicken's gut. And if you look at that and extrapolate that out, and you look at the genome of each one of those bacteria, those genomes or genes from those bacteria far outweigh the total genes of the bird. That's an interesting note. But the probiotic enhances the ability of the bird's intestinal tract to produce antibodies which can protect that bird from different types of pathogens. And like I said before, if they're overwhelmed, you know, that can be a problem. But that's up to you to control their exposure by getting good biosecurity. I know that's been talked to death a zillion times, but good biosecurity, not letting people come on your premises and handle birds and be in your coops and so on, that own chickens or have chickens and so on. It's, farm tours, gee, that's a real good deal there. Letting all kinds of people come on your property who may have anything from parrots to whatever, and possibly introduce something to your premise and to your flock. So, all of these things are extremely important to the overall, gut health and overall viability of the chick and its ability then to grow on and be a good, productive bird that you can be proud of. Andy, did you want to take a break at the top of the hour?
Yeah, that'll be fine. We can do that. And I do have some questions as well.
Chat room
that I want to get to. So when we come back, we'll get those questions. Some are kind of related, some are not. That's okay. I want to get to them. And we'll just do that when we come back after break. Yep, that sounds perfectly fine. Okay, great. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. And we've got a great topic today, which could interest lots of folks. And we're going to come back. We've got some questions in the chat room I want to ask. And we'll do that right after this short break from our sponsors. Stay tuned, folks.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today is, of course, Peter Brown, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. And you need to go there and visit. This is where you can get all your probiotics. You can get your oxine there. You can get the first aid kit, the first aid medicine kit that they've got. Tons and tons of great stuff. Again, that's FirstStateVetSupply.com. What do we say? If they don't have it, you don't need it. And vaccines, the whole nine yards. So write that down, FirstStateVetSupply.com. All righty, Peter, let me get over here to the chat room, and we'll go over, I'll ask a few of the questions. Give me just a second and bring that up. Let me scroll up here because some may have disappeared, but I think I remember most of them. Here we go. The best way to introduce more light in the coop for winter laying. Let me just scroll down here for a minute. Stop my scroll in the chat room, and I'll scroll back up. Introduce more light in the coop for winter laying. Our pullets born in June are nearing laying age, and I have a light on a timer to make sure they get 14 hours per day. Any suggestions?
Well, she wants to add more day length to it. I'm not sure that going beyond 14 hours is going to give her a whole lot, but if making sure that, you know, the birds are in good shape health-wise, nutritionally up to speed, generally we'll add 15 minutes to no more than a half an hour per week, usually 15 minutes in the beginning of the day and 15 minutes in the end of the day. And that's the easiest way to do it. That's a standard methodology for you know, increasing day length.
Is too radical a change in light for the hens, does it affect them in any bad way, like triggering maybe or forcing a molt, et cetera?
No, I don't think so. I think that what it does is it shortens your ability then to use light as a stimulant, because beyond a certain point of light, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to be bright, bright light. It has to be light that is at least down at their level for you to be able to comfortably read a newspaper. So it doesn't have to be, something that's going to light up the whole town or make the coop look like it's something out of a fairy tale and with all the light projecting out of the windows and everything else. It just has to be enough light to stimulate them to continue to lay. And usually, you know, that's the methodology that's been used for many, many years. There are many, many different lighting programs, but this is the most common used, where they will step the lighting up a little bit. 14 hours, is a fairly good day length and at this point. But if they're not laying by the time they would be expected to lay within reason, then I'd add, you know, 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the evening, and see if you can, you know, bump them up a little bit and you know, get them to go. The technically, the cold and so on shouldn't really affect them because it really is all you know, all controlled through the brain. Different spectrums of light may help. And I forget off the top of my head exactly which ones they are, but somewhere in this office I've got it. But different types of light, for instance, there is a group of birds that are born sighted but genetically go blind, but yet will lay as many eggs, if not more, than a sighted bird. And when this was looked into, they found that certain types of light actually penetrate the skull and stimulate the bird to lay in that fashion, and that's why a blind bird is able to lay. So, and I forget what the light spectrum was, but there's the current research that's going on that particular subject, and I haven't looked at it in a good while. But he is a researcher from one of the universities, I think, and don't quote me, but the University of Guelph in Canada. So you might want to start there, and I forget his name. He's got an odd name, odd in that it's not common like, you know, red, blue, green sugar or whatever. You might want to just look into that research there. It might give you the light spectrum and then change your bulbs to fit that spectrum, and that could help as well.
Hey, we've got one here. Can you have/add too much probiotic?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you can. Like anything else, a little bit is good. Too much is no good. And I was going to mention that before we wrapped up here today. But what it does is gets a situation where the gut is too acidic, and with the lactic acid, and throws the bird into somewhat of a controlled diarrhea situation. And the remedy for that is just to back off on the probiotic. What you're looking for by using a probiotic, and you'll know that you've got the balance right, is you look for a very well-formed, normal dropping on a consistent basis, and that's what it's supposed to do. For instance, we use this very same thing for people that race pigeons. They've got a program that they put together back in the 80s, which is still a valid program today. It uses this probiotic in it. And for pigeons, we are able to get them to, they like to have their droppings, what they call little marbles. They like that, nice and dry, but well-formed. And we use about an eighth of a teaspoon of this stuff in a gallon of water, and then it fixes it right up as a general rule.
Okay. We've got another one down here. Do the eggs need humidity and turning before they go into the incubator?
They don't need to be turned before they go into the incubator, unless they are being being held for a long period of time. Then I would consider turning them a little bit. The humidity, I believe the humidity when you're holding is about 70%, somewhere in there, very high, because what you're trying to do is counteract the humidity coming out. So if you could, you know, kind of technically keep it from going out of the egg. I know that when I did work in the industry, when we had some birds that were from a rare breeding or a small breeding that they wanted to do as an experimental thing, we would put all of the eggs in a paper flat, regular paper-type egg flat, and then we would put it in a cryovac bag, and these were eggs that were going to be stored for right around 30 days, and then we would take and flush all of the oxygen out of that bag with nitrogen, and then pull the bag down tight again, reflush it with nitrogen, and then band the bag up and tie it up, and then we would put it in an egg case, turn it upside down. And that's the way they would be stored. And we're pretty successful, you know, 30-day eggs, you know, getting, you know, 30%, 40% hatch out of rare type birds or a particular mating, which didn't have a huge breeder flock but needed more numbers to evaluate. It's an effective thing. I wouldn't suggest it for everybody, but it is doable. And again, the more viable the breeding stock, the greater the viability will be of those eggs. The stronger the blastoderm will be able to survive and grow, and be able to hatch without, you know, without being dried out. So yeah, can be done.
Great, and that's all I have. So we'll have you wrap up anything that you had on your outline for today's topic, more related to today's topic.
Now, let me see what else I got in my brain.
Well, that's it. Okay, folks, we're going to wrap that up today, and it's going to be a great.
There is some research that's been floating around now for several years, and I thought it was something that was worth throwing out here. And this is the growth of birds in relation to their body size. This would be from the length, basically from the back and base of the neck towards the tail. And we're talking about chicks that are first born, day one. And the larger the chick at that point, or the longer the chick, the greater the viability, the greater the livability. These birds had larger hearts, larger spleens, larger livers, slightly larger or longer intestines. It wasn't statistically significant from the next group down, but yet the length from one group to the other didn't vary quite that much. It was a huge difference between the top group, which were the longer ones, versus the smaller ones, and we're talking about birds that were right around 20 or 21 centimeters long down to one that was about 18. So not a huge gap, but when you look at it, and this goes back to what I was talking about before, small birds coming from small eggs, from small breeder flocks, or young breeder flocks rather, you know, may not give you that chick quality that you really want and need to get through the end of the day. So you might want to consider, you know, letting them lay a few eggs or so. And it's hard for people to do. A lot of folks anxious, you know, can't wait, especially if you're just starting out with birds. You can't wait to get them in the incubator and grow them out and see what you got. And I understand that and respect that, you know, and all of this is just geared to trying to help, you know, everybody try to get the best out of what they have. At the end of the day, from my perspective, it's for the least amount of money. Because, again, going back and trying to keep, you know, birds that are unthrifty or have failure to thrive type problems and so on, usually those are your smaller birds, the ones that struggle to get out of the shell and everything else. You know, I was always taught in the world I traveled in over the years, you know, if they didn't get out of the shell, too bad. And I know that sounds cold and callous, and but the usually at the end of the day, it would be the right decision because, you know, unless you've got the time and the wherewithal to you know, to have a sick pen of X amount of birds that you know, didn't make it out. And again, that goes back to incubation. It goes back to how the eggs were handled, how they were held, viability and health of the breeding flock, the age of the breeding flock, and so on and so forth. And I mean, God knows we've talked about, you know, treats and everything else as far as you know, feeding them to birds and so on and so forth are concerned. And you know, am not a big fan of it, but, you know, if people do it, that's their business, they're their birds, and if it makes them feel good at the end of the day, I'm okay with it. It's not going to show up in my backyard. And, you know, I mean, I have to just tell you, you know, the flock that we have here, I would call them, on average, pretty much maintenance-free. You know, food, water, and air. Those three things make the world go around as far as chickens are concerned. And, you know, we have, as I said before, you know, we have an abundance of roosters compared to hens. And given enough space, and they've got plenty of space here, by and large, except for a few incidents, we really don't have a problem. They go about their business. Yeah, a couple of square off every now and then with each other, and then one walks away and everything's happy, you know, because there's other things to do. So, you know, keeping them busy and that kind of stuff. But it pretty much self, you know, we put a little oil oregano in the water every day, change the water out every day, sometimes twice a day. Just depends how dirty it gets, and good quality feed, and plenty of space when they roost so they don't, you know, jump all over everybody and so on. So, you know, chickens shouldn't be, in my opinion, something where every day you've got to be out there doctoring and messing and everything else. If it is, you're doing something wrong, in my opinion. But and that's what all this is geared about. This is to make your life easier, believe it or not. And this chick length thing, you know, it plays to what I've been saying all along about, you know, if you've got a better, or not better, but bigger heart, okay, that contributes to more blood flow, greater and better skeletal and muscular development. If you've got a bigger liver to start off with, you've got a liver that's able to filter out toxins and all the other things that the liver will do. The spleen is going to be there to help everything else coexist and help with the immune system and the breakdown of iron and all the other metabolites that are necessary between the liver and the spleen. So three huge major organs, okay, are bigger in that longer chick and therefore are going to lead to greater livability, less problems. Maybe those the intestine will mature a little bit earlier for this type of bird versus a bird that is shorter in length. I think it's a huge thing, and all of these things are coming about as everybody's looking to get away from antibiotics, getting away and looking at doing things better, making the life of the birds better, whether it be commercial, whether it be your backyard flock, whether it be your show flock. That's what all this is designed to do, and at the end of the day, try to save everybody a buck in the end. And that's, to me, it's a huge thing. Also, should be noted here too that the birds that were larger at 1 day of age when they were first born, okay, were heavier at 7 day weights, okay, and that for every centimeter of growth, they were at 7 days, they were about 18 grams heavier than their pen mates. That's huge. Now, whether you're egg-laying birds, whether you're looking at birds for confirmation, whether you're looking at birds for meat production or any of those things, these are huge. And that means that this is a well-oiled, highly refined machine that's really getting the job done, making the best of the resources that you've given it, whether it be probiotic, a good feed and water and all the love and care and all the things that you do for your birds. This is the payoff. This is those healthy birds that thrive and do well and just grow out gorgeous. And that's what everybody should be striving for, at least from my perspective, at the end of the day. So there you have it.
Okay. One last question, actually, from Arlena from GardenWise Living on our Wednesday show. There's a member of her chicken group that has her dog got out and tore a small hole in her skin. And it sounds maybe like a puncture hole from a tooth. But nonetheless, dog got her hand, tore a small hole in her skin. She's laying, she's eating, seems like everything's fine. But the chicken owner wants to take the chicken to the vet for stitches, and the consensus of the group was that to just kind of treat it and it would heal on its own. And they just wanted your worth on that.
Yeah, I'd keep it clean, and usually most of the time, unless it's really
flapped open and
a real bleeding type flesh wound or something like that, most people don't want to stitch it anyway 24 hours after the event.
Right.
You know, let me just say this: I've been working with a person whose bird was attacked by a hawk and literally. Basically destroyed one side of the bird's face, okay? And we've been working to keep this bird viable. We're making some progress. I don't think the bird will make a 100% recovery. I think there's nerve damage that we just can't see and don't have the wherewithal, not the wherewithal, but the means to repair. But none of that tissue was stitched, not a bit of it. You know, there doesn't seem to be any infection, although we did put the bird on an antibiotic for a while as a precautionary thing. I do believe that the bird will probably lose the vision in one eye. But other than that, I mean, I don't see any need. You know, I mean, if it makes a person feel better and they want to spend the money, let them do it. You know, that's their... I don't try to discourage people that want to do those things, but I don't see where it's necessary. But, you know, everybody has their own take on it, as you well know. And,
Yeah.
You know, I would not spend the money unless I felt it was necessary, whether it be the birds here or the birds anywhere else. That's just my take on it. You know, I judge things here for the same thing. We get, you know, something out of control here, we'll evaluate it and see what we need to do and take the appropriate action, whether it involves an outside vet or other resources that I don't have, or whatever the case may be, we'll take that action, whatever is necessary. But I don't see it with a puncture wound. They're quite common, actually. Birds get bit all the time, not only by dogs or cats or whatever, but by their pen mates, and, you know, break the skin and so on. And
yeah.
Go on. Yeah, they're pretty resilient for the most part. I mean, they are actually quite amazing at times. Sometimes birds that you would think that should just fall over dead actually end up being, you know, pretty viable at the end of the day. So, from my take, I wouldn't do anything. I'd keep it clean. I might put some triple antibiotic ointment on it, something like that. But I don't think I would take it to the vet. I mean, I've had them where the skin's been ripped right off completely. Feathers and skin gone, nothing from right down the bare back. And kept it clean and put some antibiotic cream back on it, and eventually the skin grows back. Feathers might come in a little funky once the feather bed is disturbed and distorted, but other than that, it usually comes back after a while and they go on. So, it's their call.
No, thank you very much. Well, we appreciate you coming on. As always, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State VetSupply.com. Check them out. Place your order. Get some good stuff. Get that emergency medicine kit there for you to have in your chicken kit. The probiotics and oil of oregano and just a bunch of oxine when you go to clean your coops out and your run. You can even use oxine nasal flush on your birds, things like that. So he's got it there, folks. Go check him out. FirstStateVetSupply.com. And Peter, thank you very much for another great episode this Monday, and we will see you next Monday. I believe it's Thanksgiving week next week, but we will have at least a Monday show, possibly a Monday Tuesday show, so we'll see you next week if you're going to be around.
I will be.
All righty, we'll see you then. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a great week, my friend.
You too now. Bye.
Bye-bye. All righty, that's Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State VetSupply.com, so head on over there and check him out. There was a question in the chat room about probiotics and yogurt. I wanted to address that. And, Peter is a huge advocate of oil of oregano for chickens. He's been working with a turkey farm there this year, and they've had dramatic results, and even a lot of commercial poultry companies are using oil of oregano in reduction of antibiotic, and they're having great success with it. I don't think anybody right now
is challenging the fact that we need to get away from using antibiotics all the time. All of oregano has stepped up, even on some of the commercial farms. So maybe we can have Doc back again and answer that specifically. But Ann, you had talked about probiotics in yogurt, and I'm kind of a stickler regarding that with heat lamps and heating coops in the wintertime. So I'll address that with you, and then we'll wrap up the show. In fact, one of my articles for Acreage Life magazine is going to deal just with this topic. I posted on my Facebook page maybe a week or two ago within the last 2 weeks, and basically it was worded, you know, do you give your chickens yogurt, and if so, why? And the big deal is I always want to ask why. When people say, oh, I'm giving them yogurt, if it's just for a treat, if they're trying to do it to benefit them based on probiotics, that we always see on TV, the Activia and good for your gut and probiotics and all those words I can't pronounce, the bacteria that's in there and whatnot. So I talk about this, and it is scientific fact, and we know this from poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D., that chickens do not have the necessary enzymes in their gut to properly digest dairy. That includes dairy, you know, the milk and cheese and that type of thing. Now, when I always say that, I always back it up and say, yes, I'm going to have someone post, I've been giving my chickens chunks of cheese for 80 years and they're just fine. Okay, keep doing what you're doing. Go for it. Okay. But for those of you who want to help your chickens, you can listen to the following information. There is not enough of the quote-unquote good stuff, probiotic, in store-bought yogurt to do a darn bit of good for your chickens. So if you're going out every day and buying a cup of yogurt, whether it be Yoplait or Fruit on the Bottom or Chobain or whatever kind of yogurt you're buying out of the grocery store, there's not enough of the good stuff. You're wasting your time. But if you look at the label, there's plenty of bad stuff. High fructose corn syrup, loaded with sugar. Okay, artificial colors, artificial flavors, and all the stuff your chickens do not need. Not to mention they don't have the enzymes in their gut to properly digest dairy, including yogurt. So I asked folks, I love that, Arlene. and so I tell folks, are you doing it to help them or just as a treat every now and then? If you're doing it to help them, let's add the numbers up. If you give your chickens a cup of yogurt every day for a month, it's about $1 a cup. That's $30 a month, and you're doing nothing except giving them a lot of crap that they don't need. When you can get a nice big bottle of probiotics designed specifically for chickens to add in their water for $19.95 at firststatevetsupply.com, Peter Brown, which is going to probably last you longer than 30 days. So not only will you now save money, but you will also now be benefiting your chickens with a probiotic designed for them that they can benefit from, and they're not getting all the sugar and the high fructose corn syrup, the artificial flavors, the artificial colors, and the dairy that they can't digest to begin with. Too much can and will give them diarrhea. So people say, oh, I give my chickens yogurt all the time, and they love it. I've had people post that on my Facebook page. Oh, I give my chickens yogurt all the time, and they love it. I'm sure they do love it. Sugar, high fructose corn syrup, artificial flavors, artificial colors. You know, Caleb loves chocolate bars. But I said, he's 2.5. Does that mean because he loves it, I'm going to give it to him every single day? No. Okay? So it's the same thing there. Russ, I love it when people post that. Well, I've been giving my chickens yogurt, and they absolutely love it. Yeah, I'm sure they do. Caleb loves stickers. So I always try to ask why. If it's just the occasional leftover yogurt you didn't finish or the occasional yogurt cup, knock yourself out. But if my point is for the folks that are giving it to them thinking they're helping their chickens, and they're not. If you give them a cup of yogurt, are they going to die? No. Is it necessarily bad for them? No. But if you're doing it because you think you're helping them, then I do want to set this record straight there and give you an alternative where you can help them and not waste your time and your money. $30 a month for yogurt, $19.95 for probably much longer than a month's dose of good probiotic that you can add to the water and actually help. So I always go down that route with people when I see folks giving yogurt. So is it going to kill them? No. If you give it a lot, diarrhea, maybe. But you're not helping them at all by giving it to them. And it has all that nasty stuff in it. So that's going to wrap up another great show, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today's guest, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Go check him out. And, hey, tomorrow we're going to be talking about essential oils with Tracy over at Purple Lotus Oils. I'm sure she's going to have a lively subject and topic and for tomorrow's show. That's tomorrow. And then this coming up Wednesday, yep, we've got Garden-Wise Living with Arlena. Year-round gardening. We're going to learn about this coming up Wednesday. Love it. And then this Thursday, another chicken expert, poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, is going to be joining us. I'm not even sure what the topic's going to be, but she'll be joining us Thursday, and that's going to wrap up the week on Thursday. So thank you very much for tuning in today. We hope you had a good time in the chicken chat room. Hope you learned a lot about your backyard flocks from my good friend, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. And we also hope that you will be able to tune in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And though I would love to play my theme song, my mouse is missing. There it is. I got some glare from the sun, so finally found that little critter. Get over here, mouse. Gotta love it. Well, hey, thanks very much for tuning in, folks. We'll see you tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we're going to be talking about essential oils. Tracy, Purple Lotus Oils, that's tomorrow. Join us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. God bless everybody.
Background.